நித்தானந்த பக்தினோ தாக்கூர் கங்கா ஸ்ரீமத் பாகவதம்
When I lived here 4 years ago, there was a Bhagavad Gita kept in the drawer. Maybe that could be done again. Please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man, who has been recently engaged to work with us, cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Report. The other palanquin carriers were Sudras. Whereas Judd Bart was not only a high caste Brahmin, but also a great devotee. Sudras do not sympathize with other living beings, but a Vaishnava cannot act like a Sudra. Whenever a Sudra and a Brahmin Vaishnava are combined, there will certainly be an imbalance in the execution of duties. The Sudras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground, but Judd Bart could not act like a Sudra, and therefore the difficulty arose. King Rahugana could understand the speeches given by the carriers who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry. Although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced, his anger arose due to his inborn nature as a king. Although King Rahugana's mind was actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion. And he therefore spoke as follows to Judd Bart, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. Report. the distinction between Rajagun and Sattvagun is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion. And therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Judd Bart, despite all kinds of injustice endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, his Brahma Teja, his Brahman effulgence, was indistinctly visible in his person. Om Abhyana Timurandasya Janandana Shulakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Rave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stavitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Padamayam Tadati Svapadanti Kam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Sya Shri Rupam Sarajatam Savina Ravinatam Vitam Tam Sijivam Sadvaitam, Savadutam, Arijana Saitam, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padan, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakhapi Namascha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bando Jagatpate, Gopicha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namoshite, Jaitam Srito Pangor, Mama Manda Mater Gati Matsar Vasva Padam Bojo Dada Madana Mohano Divya Bhaktivanya Kalpa Chumada Srimad Vatnagara Srimad Sanasto Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devo Vistalabhi Sivyamano Smarami Srimad Rasa Rasarambi Bhamsi Vatakutastita Karshan Venu Svanar Gopir Gopinata Trieskina Taptakan Chanagorami Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishavan Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatulubhyascha Vitasandubhyascha Adhidhanam Bhavayavyo Krishnavyo Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasavi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sarva Bhuteshu Yena Ekam Bhavam Avyayam Ikshyate Avibhaktam Vibhakteshu Tajjanam Vidhi Sattvikam. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. The person who sees one spiritual soul in every living being, whether a demigod, human being, animal, bird, beast, aquatic, or plant, or in this case, ant, possesses knowledge in the mode of goodness. In all living entities, one spirit soul is there, though they have different bodies in terms of their previous work. As described in the 7th chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Thus, to see that one superior nature, that living force in every body, is to see in the mode of goodness. In another place in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada describes how the devotee is not interested in ephemeral appearances. And we see that this will be a very strong and steady, threadbare presentation from Judd Bart when he finally begins to speak. You are thinking are a king, and you are thinking that I am your servant, but all of this is under the modes of nature. Today you are my master and I your servant, but tomorrow that could be reversed. And you could be my servant and I your master. I am not fat or skinny or thin or any such thing. I am not this body. I am a self-realized person. That living energy is imperishable, although the bodies are perishable. Those whose minds are established in equanimity are truly situated in Brahman. Differences are perceived in terms of the body, and that difference will be seen because one has material desires. When one is devoid of material desires, then one can perceive the true spiritual nature of every living entity. And how can that be accomplished? By rendering service to the great soul, to the pure devotee. That is the only way. And actually, Jet Bharat, he concludes in this first chapter, that the mind, being the repository of all our material desires, is just like an independent, uncontrolled elephant. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, even though it is not factual, it will emerge victorious and cover the soul and make him conditioned. There is only one way to be free from this enslavement by the materialistic mind, and that is service to the pure devotee. Do this with great care. And Krishna says also, the result of rendering service to the pure devotee in the fourth chapter, which later in the 18th chapter, the conclusion of renunciation, that this knowledge should not be spoken to one who is not austere, nor to one who has, and Prabhupada uses the word, tended to a spiritual master. The result of rendering service to the spiritual master, inquiring him from confidentially, and having university degrees are not helpful. When one, the spiritual master, sees the sincere desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses him with spiritual knowledge. And what is the result of that proper association and service to the spiritual master? You will see that every living being is in me, is part of me, and they are mine. Differences are perceived in terms of the body.
If the boom is long, it will drift down. If the boom is short, it doesn't have the power to do that.
These are details that make for very good. You're like this, you're doing this, and this is on. First class service.
Okay.
To be noticed of this. Bhavananda was speaking at the 39th observance of Prabhupada's disappearance day in Vrindavan, and he was saying how Prabhupada was very alert to find even the slightest discrepancy and point it out to make your service become first class. And he described it in terms of how Prabhupada could bring you up and then bring you down. He was on the morning walk in Mayapur, and he's praising in front of all big devotees and leaders, Bhavananda, such a good manager. Everything is neat and clean. This is expert management. And then later, Prabhupada was on the roof of the original Lotus building, and the wind had created in one corner just some like debris, some leaves and some papers and some other things. And he immediately called for Bhavananda, who was in another part of the building, and brought him up here and said, you know, you are the worst manager I've ever had. look at all this dirt. Or another time, Prabhupada looked into the toilet room and saw that a lota was there for cleansing that he previously he had seen in the worship of Tulsi Devi.
Oh my God.
Another time in Vrindavan, Gopal Krishna Maharaj and Dhananjaya Prabhu were the temple managers at the time, showing Prabhupada many new things that they had done to make the temple very good, like the creation of the what's now the Sri Sri Gauranitai bookstall and prasadam table counter in the back of the temple room. And they're saying, yes, Prabhupada, everything is first class. And Prabhupada was, yes. And then Prabhupada put his cane down and he said, you say everything is first class, but I say it is 10th class. And you brought me 5,000 miles to show you that there's a pigeon's bird's nest in the chandelier. Get it out right away. Differences are perceived in terms of the body. Because there are many forms of material existence in the conditional life, the living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization. So, where are most people situated? That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity. You should understand to be in the mode of passion. The concept that the material body is the living entity and that with the destruction of the body, the consciousness is also destroyed is called knowledge in the mode of passion. According to that knowledge, bodies differ from one another because of the development of different types of consciousness. Otherwise, there is no separate soul which manifests consciousness. The body itself is the soul, and there is no separate soul beyond the body. According to that knowledge, consciousness is temporary. Or else there are no individual souls, but there is an all-pervading soul which is full of knowledge, and this body is a manifestation of temporary ignorance. Or beyond this body, there is no special individual or supreme soul. All such conceptions are considered products of the mode of passion. So in verse 4, it's clearly pointed out that whenever a sudra and a realized Brahman are combined, there will certainly be an imbalance of duties. America, where everybody is equal. Or whatever the conception of communism, maybe even worse over there, that everybody's equal. It's not that everyone is equal on the practical platform, let's call it like that. Is my head the same as my arms? Or is my leg the same as my stomach? Let's try it. Let's see if I can eat with my feet. Would it work? For Krishna, it would. All his senses are interchangeable. By pleasing one sense, you please all the other senses. But on the material platform, but if the, this is just kindergarten theology here, if you just think, well, if I have to eat, if I can't eat with my feet, I'll have to use my hands to put the food in the mouth, and then the mouth will send it down the, what's that called?
Esophagus.
Esophagus, not sarcophagus, right? And then the stomach digests, and then, Srila Bhakti Sananda tells that story of the idiot gardener and a Brahmin thought that, you know, you could put the food in the ears and the nose and... And again, the story that we that Srila Bhakti Sananda told about the potter and the blacksmith who were friends, thinking that material activities, which are for the satisfaction of prayas, temporary material activities, is the same as long-term, far-reaching shreyas, activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be one and the same. In many different countries, or even states, the United States, when the authorities see Harinam Sankirtan being performed in public, they'll say, where's your permit? Because you're playing music. All the musicians need a permit. But at least here in New York, a very, very clear understanding that we're not musicians, we're religious people, and we're protected by the First Amendment, freedom of speech and religion. So this is very, very good, actually. And maybe this is one reason why America, with its all of its puffed up pride and imperial world domination ideas, has been able to stand for so long, because of the basic protection of religion, which we should certainly take full advantage of, especially here in New York. Just like in Moscow or in Russia, they passed, what is it, an anti-sharing law, which is, practically speaking, very dangerous for devotees to preach in any forum, even on Facebook or some social media. They have to put a disclaimer saying that that I'm putting religious ideas here, and you should know that beforehand. So if you look at this post, you know. The sutras were walking with the palate when the valet all caring for the ants on the ground, but Jud Bharat could not act like a sutra, and therefore difficulty arose. Then the discussion of Maharaj Rahugana thinking that he's a king and that he's very advanced in diplomacy and intrigue and making various types of plots and plans to maintain and increase his sovereignty. He thinks he's very intelligent and expert. The distinction between Rajagun and Sattvagun is explained in this verse. Earlier in the chapter Divisions of Faith, in terms of sacrifice, what is it where the person is to maintain his position that people worship him and give him honor and respect and riches? The results of such things are temporary. They can be maintained for some time, but not for a long period of time. That's the material world, thinking oneself the false emperor, false king. Narottam Das Thakur in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, he gives warning to the would-be devotee, to the aspirant. The monarch's kingdom is simply like the dramatic dance of a stage actor. In a moment it's there, but then it vanishes. This is the play of Maya. Oh, beware of this. penance. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor, and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. The results are temporary and can be continued for some time, but they are not permanent. Whereas Chud Bharat, because of his, as it's described here, deaf and dumb display, tolerated all different types of injustice. He remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. One of the qualities of the devotee is that he is silent in nonsense. Chud Bharat, in his association, albeit a pious, at least his father, before he passed away, Brahmin, but not self-realized, it's explained, was extremely cautious to avoid bad association, to not be influenced in any way. Actually, he very much repented his own neglect of his spiritual duties and failure to control his mind in the previous birth, where he let mundane sentiment overwhelm the spiritual knowledge, which is a concomitant factor of true spiritual sentiment or bhava. And he was very, very alert to not allow that same mistake to ever happen again. Also, austerity. Of silence, austerity of speech consists of speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others. Agitating meaning based on one's own false ego or pride and putting others into distress. But one very important definition of the word sadhu means to cut. He cuts away the material attachments. This is actually his mercy. Just like a doctor, if someone foolishly thinks, suffering from a very painful boil, that by putting like temporary numbing anesthesia or itching cream or something like that, that this is very nice. Whereas what really has to be done is the whole thing has to be cut out, which might seemingly be painful. That which in the beginning seems just like poison, but in the end is just like nectar, is happiness in the mode of goodness, which awakens one to our true spiritual nature. Whereas happiness, which in the beginning seems very, very nice, but in the end is just like poison, is happiness in the mode of passion. And of course, the main characteristic or the main type of so-called happiness in the mode of passion, which is remarked in that purport, is happiness, so-called happiness, in association between men and women. And Prabhupada graphically describes a sexual advance. It might seem very, very nice, but in the end, it's just like poison, because it is complete bewilderment of one's self-realization and puts one 100% squarely at the merciless machinations of the material energy. Such happiness should be avoided at all costs. That's why there is Grihastha Ashram under strict rules and regulations so that the devotee candidates, the equal spirit souls in that temporary relationship of man and woman, will come out of that ashram free and clear once and for all and forever from mundane attraction, having their relationship with Krishna reclarified and reinstated. That is the meaning of ashram, spiritual shelter. So, and also in regularly reciting the Vedic literature. One should not speak in such a way as to agitate the mind of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction of his students. One should be, if one is going to give a strong or, let's say, indisputable instruction or guideline from the Vedas, one has to be completely realized in that knowledge himself. Otherwise, simply repeating without realization could be a type of violence. Like Srila Prabhupada, he's following the most merciful method of Srila Rupa Goswami, which was certainly infused upon him as the chief disciple of Lord Chaitanya, by Lord Chaitanya himself. Somehow or another become Krishna conscious. Rules and regulations can come later. And Prabhupada came bearing the most sacred and elevated love of Krishna in Vrindavan. You should move so I can see Adi Push. Thank you.
He had begged.
How to present that knowledge, that most sacred Sambandha Tattva Gyan. He was fully blessed by all the predecessor acharyas, his Guru Maharaj, and all the sacred forms of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. He came from Seva Kunj, the inner heart, the inner hub of the wheel of the spiritual world, the most sacred place. The attraction of Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada exuded from his very presence was indescribably great. So then later, when rules and regulations were introduced, the devotees very, very gladly accepted them, because they understood that those rules and regulations were only there to facilitate their coming to the highest pitch of love of Godhead in pursuance with their eternal ever well-wisher and dearmost friend and savior, Srila Prabhupada. So we should be careful. That is called the difference between proper following and imitation. He can speak the truth to his students. But such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students, or those whose faith and allegiance is proportionately not there in proportion with the, let's say, intensity of the instruction meant to sever the ties of material attachment, gross and subtle. This requires very great insight and intelligence based on deep compassion. Have we developed that? We should be careful. This is penance as far as talking is concerned. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to hear. In another place in the Bhagavatam, Vidura is praising Maitreya and how my mind is perfectly entering into your words. Such speaking should be very, very meaningful. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. There is a limitless stock of Vedic literature, and one should study this. This is called Penance of Speech. And what is austerity of the mind? To detach it from sex gratification. And what is the best way to do that? The mind should be so trained that it can only but think of the welfare of others. The mind should be so trained that it can always be thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity and thought. The mind should be devoid of duplicity. Duplicity means two purposes. Say one thing, but mean another. Think one thing, but act a different way. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Jiva Himsa, envy. Envy and duplicity are related things. So what is the main symptom or bad practical result that comes from envy and duplicity? That the preaching work is stopped. Or, correspondingly, that those who keep the preaching work, keep the welfare activities for others going, against all odds, that is symptomatic of, at least we could say, one who is truly, sincerely desirous to get free from this envy, nirmatsaranam satam. The mind should be devoid of duplicity and should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this case. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity and mental activities. So Judd Bart, his silence was actually very, very powerful thinking of Krishna. Thinking of Krishna constitutes the highest form of knowledge. In the concluding verses of the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll see, we just saw how the goddess Kali herself came to save Judd Bart, understanding his greatness as a pure devotee of Krishna, Lord Vasudeva. So we'll see how this wonderful conversion of Maharaj Rahuguna and enlightenment takes place. And we'll hear very profoundly and astoundingly the glorious transcendental wisdom of the great saint, Judd Bart. Thank you very much. Adi, something?
Applying the application of the principle illustrated here in our experience, in our circles, right today, we have situations. I mean, each of us is considering if we were to step into a position. position like Jetapora, where there are people who are not willing to hear, not interested. Does anybody know the situation? You see, perhaps, you know, and what to do, and then what can we learn from this so that we can, you know, function properly. You know, it says if you give good instruction to an ignorant person, a foolish person, he'll simply become angry. So we're, you know, for us, it's a very delicate, you know, the book distribution, the Harinam, any kind of interaction between us and people that don't have very strong faith. Delicate, you know, and how we can act nicely in such a way that they are enlivened, that they see that actually you have their best interests at heart, that you care about them, that you're not trying to get anything from them, manipulate them, exploit them, put them down. You know, so that's our challenge. And by Krishna's grace, you know, year after year, we see so many people actually drawn into Krishna consciousness by the contact with the devotees. We're becoming purified too by reaching out like that. When we get off the proper quality of consciousness, and people aren't inspired, then they are disturbed. Some people say, "Why is this book distributed?" Even in the movie, they say, "This book distribution just caused so much bad publicity, so many people disturbed. It shouldn't be done." I've heard people, devotees, say that. You know, so it can be done nicely. We should have confidence. It can be done in a beautiful way. And I've seen book distributors who all day long almost never have anyone disturbed with them. And actually, that the books go out, that the people give, and then they say, "You don't mind helping us?" "No, no, thank you very much for engaging." People, you know, it can be done like that. We can have faith like that, not be discouraged or, you know, give it up. But it has to be done carefully.
It's the most sacred service that is so deeply blessed by the most exalted pure devotees. The activity of distributing the Vedic wisdom is an eternal activity which even the Lord himself, in the form of Hayagriva, takes up. So, something that is so powerfully desired by the Lord and his pure devotees will have so much great mystic potency and internal energies of attraction to Krishna involved. Like it says, who could fail to be attracted? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.